on 2UE. George and Paul's Crime File.
Okay, and today it's Stan the Man Smith, Sydney's last Mr. Big.
We are led to believe that important gangsters' funerals are, well, they're elaborate affairs. An endless procession of limousines behind a hearse six deep with bouquets of red Dutch long-stem roses and a shiny mahogany coffin.
And lots of blokes with black sunglasses.
With gold. I'm getting to them.
I knew they'd be there somewhere.
You knew they were there, didn't you? With gold handles piled high with lilies and gladioli. Seated women in black moan around the graveside while a procession of sinister men with patent leather haircuts and sunglasses.
I think I saw it in The Sopranos.
Actually, this was in The Godfather. This was Don Corleone's. Where were we? Seated women in black moan around a graveside while a procession of sinister men with patent leather hair and sunglasses place a single red rose on the coffin and cross themselves.
My condolences, a little something for you and your children.
At least.
As he hands the envelope over.
No, that's a wedding, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
At least that's how it happens. In the movies. I think that was... maybe it does in real life in America. Anyway, it didn't happen for Stan the Man Smith. Although he was Sydney's last Mr. Big of organised crime in every sense of the word, Stan Smith's funeral was meant to be a humble affair after he dropped dead of a heart attack at his Sydney home on the 13th of January 2010, aged 73. Well, actually, a lot of people were very surprised that Stan Smith dropped dead at just 73 because he worked out and he was very fit and they were very surprised. Well, at least it was planned to be a very humble affair, but there was no stopping his many hundreds of friends and admirers at the West Ryde Baptist Church in Sydney's inner west where he worshipped on a daily basis. But Stan wasn't always a man of God. There was a time when he was the most godless and feared man in Sydney, a man you paid immediately when he came to collect for fear of being brutally bashed, or worse, if you had committed an underworld offence that was punishable by death and Stan Smith had been given the job, then it was a good idea to go and live in West Australia, in the goldfields perhaps, for a while. Stan Smith became so notorious as the underworld's top assassin that he was blamed for every gangland killing that took place and was responsible for as many as about 14 of them. Among those were some of the most brazen murders in our history. But as the gun smoke lifted and the police knocked on Stan's door, he always had a watertight alibi and lots of witnesses to back it up. A tall, intelligent, good-looking and fearless man who loved to work out, Stan Smith was always immaculately groomed in a suit and a stylish hat of the time and looked more like a successful accountant than Australia's number one underworld killer. In the mafia, he would be the Vindicatore, the family's hitman. Stan was simply known as the man. Born in Balmain in 1937, the only thing young Stanley John Smith ever aspired to do was work on the wharves like the other tough men of his time. Despite spending time in New South Wales' toughest juvenile reformatories, this all changed at 18 when he met the local career criminal, Lenny McPherson. The older McPherson took the young thug under his wing and mentored Stan as a collector for his standover business of illegal brothels, the suburban casinos and the sly grog joints that thrived throughout Sydney at the time. By the 1960s, Stan the Man was the most feared heavy in Sydney. McPherson and Smith formed an alliance with SP bookmaker George Freeman, and from then on the trio virtually ran the Sydney underworld. The well-connected McPherson controlled protection for the Darlinghurst Red Light District and all of the other illegal activities in Sydney that needed a conduit between organised crime and the police. George Freeman controlled all of the SP betting in pubs, clubs and backyards and phone betting throughout Sydney, and Stan the Man saw to it that no one tried to take over any of their enterprises. You either paid up or Stan paid you a visit. Most paid. But there were always those who chose to deal with the police direct and cut out the middleman. The major casino operators who had long-standing personal connections with politicians and police, from the Premier to the Police Commissioner down, they got away with it. But they were the only ones. For the others, it was to toe the line or be bashed and killed. Some chose not to, and throughout the 1960s, 70s and early 80s, lots of dead gangsters turned up in very public places. One of those who refused to pay McPherson's extortion of his new illegal baccarat club was greyhound trainer and underworld heavy Charlie Burke. Early one morning in February 1964, when Burke pulled into his Randwick home and got out of his car, a lone gunman shot him 10 times from nearby bushes, walked over to the body, reloaded, and shot him another 10 times just to make sure. When one of the most feared men in Sydney, Jackie Steele, challenged McPherson's stranglehold on extortion, he also copped it. One evening in November 1965, Steele was walking in Wallara in Sydney's affluent eastern suburbs when he was torn apart by shotgun blasts from a passing car and died in hospital 4 weeks later. In September 1974, brothel keeper and child murderer John Stuart Reagan was on his way to an illegal gambling casino in Marrickville when three gunmen emptied their .38 revolvers into him at point-blank range, hitting him 8 times. As Reagan lay dying, his killers calmly reloaded and shot him again, just to be on the safe side. In June 1963, there was a very public demise of the handsome young gangster Robert Pretty Boy Walker, who was cut in half with a hail of bullets from an Owen submachine gun in the early evening as he strolled to the pub in busy Randwick. Coincidentally, 2 months earlier, Pretty Boy had shot and almost killed Stan Smith. Just a coincidence, I would imagine. In June 1979, John Marcus Muller was shot dead by a lone gunman with 3 bullets from a 9mm pistol as he arrived in his as he arrived at his Coogee residence just after midnight. 6 weeks earlier, Muller had almost killed George Freeman when he shot him in the neck and face at point-blank range and fled. Also, in 1979, a heroin dealer was found dead after having been repeatedly run over by a car. It was no coincidence that Stan Smith's son, Stan Jr., a heroin addict, had died of a heroin overdose earlier that year, and that the man was reputedly his supplier. All of these murders and many more were attributed to Stan the Man. But, ironically, the one that he was very publicly accused of on TV after his death, that of missing hitman Christopher Dale Flannery, was one of the ones he didn't commit. Considered to be the real criminal mastermind behind the organisation, Stan preferred to stay in the shadows and keep a very low profile. when George Smith passed away at his home in 1990 and then Lenny McPherson died in prison in 1996, Stan the Man automatically assumed the role of the Mr. Big of organised crime in New South Wales.